Every individual must learn what it means to be human, and this understanding begins developing in early childhood. What matters most for our youngest children is how we are with them, how we show them what kindness, empathy, and respect look like. They are following their leaders. Welcome to the Leading for Children podcast. We're excited you're here with us today as we explore what it means to put humanity first, to engage in a movement about prioritizing connection as a means to strengthen community. I'm Judy Jablon, founder and strategic advisor for Leading for Children. Joining me in this conversation is LFC's executive director, Nicole Parks. Nicole, I would love for you to say hi and introduce our guests.
Thanks, Judy. Hi, everyone that's listening, and hi to our special guests. So today we have with us Kyson Buntawong. We have with us today Vivian Matalong and our producer extraordinaire, Julia Conley. With that, I will invite you, Kyson, to say hello to our audience.
Hello out there, whoever is listening, friendly folks, humble ears. I'm Kyson, as mentioned. I am based in Oakland, California. I am someone who's been in nonprofit for many years and have followed my career to working with Leading for Children. So I'm so humbled to be a part of this conversation. And very quickly as well, I'm also in the fundraising space and trying to resource communities to do this important work. So I know how much not only moving dollars matter, but moving kindness and empathy and respect and everything we'll be talking about today. So wonderful to be here.
Thank you, Kyson. Vivian, would you like to say hello to our audience that's listening?
I would love to. Thank you. Hello, everyone who's listening and everyone who's here today. I'm very honored to be here among such an incredible group. My name is Vivian Matalon. I have for many years worked in marketing, advertisement, in the role of client services. I also have been a caregiver for family members in the last 4 years, which has kind of led me down a different path, but is very similar as it relates to the things that I focus on now, which is really holding people together and ensuring that everyone's getting what they need to do and accomplish whatever it is that their particular role requires, whether that's, again, a family member or the teams that I use to manage in my professional life. So I'm excited to be here because I feel like kindness is probably the key to everything.
Thank you, Vivian. Julia, would you like to say hello?
Thanks, Nicole, Vivian. I'm Julia Connolly, and I am Leading for Children's Development and Communications Associate and the producer of this podcast. And you might know my voice from several episodes before. I am really looking forward to being in conversation today with you all.
So our conversation today is about seeing kindness as a strength. And often when we do introductions, we also describe not just our professional roles, but the important people in our lives who we take care of or who we're part of a caring community. I have a very small family of me and my spouse, and then we have built a family made of friends, and I'm also the aunt to many nieces. And then I feel I just have this wonderful network of people that I do a lot of work to preserve those kind connections. Can I pass it to you, Nicole, to list some of the humans in your life and how you are wearing many hats?
Sure, Judy, thank you. So I am a mother of 3 adult children and then a teenager. So that's fun. I am a grandmother of 5 of the greatest children in the world. I am a sister. I am an aunt to no less than 20 children. And also, I have a community of young adults and teenagers and children that I consider to be my honorary nieces, nephews, and some of them even children. Funnily enough, one of my social medias, they named it Proud Mama to Many. And so I just think one of the greatest gifts in life is being able to make connections with young adults and children and to really just be that person that they know they can go to, because every child deserves to know that they are the center of somebody's universe.
Thank you so much for that, Nicole. And I want to reference it back to my introduction when I said that what matters most to our youngest children, but really to all of us, is how people are with us and the experience of receiving kindness, empathy, and respect. And that all those humans that Nicole touches are following their leader. Would anyone else be willing to share who their ecosystem is and the various roles? Vivian, can I volunteer you for that one?
Absolutely.
You have a multi-generational perspective.
I've got many in my little circle. I have a wife who I've been together with for about 19 years now, only married, just 1.5, although we did have a civil union in Judy's backyard some years ago. And between us, we have 3 children who are pretty adultish now. A 28-year-old daughter who just got married this past summer, so now I have a son-in-law, so Kyla and Juan. And then I have a 23-year-old who lives in New York. Her name is Eden. She's kind of living her life, being independent for the first time, and it's amazing to watch. And then my youngest is 19, and he's doing school and starting to grow up, and it's very different because it's girl, girl, boy. The energies are all very different. But what makes me very proud as a mother is that I have these kids who, truthfully, when they're together, they want to spend time with us. But then when we go to bed, their favorite thing to do is stay up playing cards until 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, which it's heartwarming because it's so easy and they have their little routines that have started. Similar to you, Nicole, I am an aunt many, 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 many times over. And I have siblings and my mother is still with us. I have an uncle that I'm extremely close to. And I have an ex-husband who I'm extremely close to. So I feel like I got very lucky. I have a wonderful group and I have collected along the way a lot of the kids who came in and out of our lives and have found that often I receive a text or a phone call from someone that I haven't heard from in a while because they're struggling with something that they wanted to ask a parent who's not their parent. And I, again, feel very honored to occupy that role.
Tyson?
I would say my community is very much so similar to everyone here. Their family. I have a wonderful partner who I've been with for coming on 11 years, which is a long time for, I guess, a queer marriage. So just having someone who's been a rock and together building a community, I think was something that I very luckily found in this person. As his name is Michael, by the way, and he's just so great. And what we've been intentionally doing over the number of years we've been together is to build community wherever we go. We've moved, I remember moving every year for 7 years, just chasing cheap rent up and down California, moving from New York. And we found that it's hard to build community and stay in touch with friends if you only do it by geography. So we've had to be very creative, staying in community with family members, but also close friends I've known since kindergarten, all the way to the new friends that I make, you know, just by virtue of being neighbors. So I feel like community for us has always been changing, but the one solid thing that we've both intentionally done is build a community of kind folks and folks that respect us and honor our lifestyle. So for us, it's maybe untraditional, but it works. And the community that we have supports us. I feel very, very lucky. And the great thing is I now get to pass on some of those values to my niece. So my younger brother just had a kid about a year ago and she just celebrated her first birthday. So I look forward to helping her learn how to do this as well.
Thank you for that. Julia.
Thank you. My community right now is mostly away from me. I'm on my own, traveling around and staying in different places and trying to connect with my own sense of home inside of myself. But at the same time, there are so many relationships around that are very, very important to me and ground me. And I'm a firstborn daughter. I have two little brothers and, you know, all the things you hear about firstborn daughters and the roles that they take on usually resonate with me. I take a lot of pride in the relationships I've cultivated with my younger brothers. Our parents got divorced when we were in elementary school, and so I think that experience helped us find strength in each other, and we knew each other's experience more than anyone else did, and we were each other's constant. And because they were younger than me, I often was the stability, the constant kind of parent role between the different households. And so I would say that my value for unconditionally being available and a listener, and, you know, I want to be a home for other people. And I think that came from wanting to be a home for my brothers and the rewarding feeling of the love that we share, and that now we're all living in different states and they call me almost every day at the worst times. And I love it. I love talking to them. And I think they're such interesting people. I'm very close with both of my parents and my grandparents and many friends from college and before and new ones. As I move around the country now, I'm finding new connections that I'm really enjoying. It's a little daunting when you're just starting out in the world and you don't know who to go to and who will be available for you, and just taking some risks right now of being vulnerable and connecting with people that I might not have instinctively or on my own comfortably.
Thank you all for sharing. I think context is always so important, and we represent many different generations. We represent very diverse backgrounds. And then there were some common themes. There was the common theme of intentionally building and the resilience that comes from making choices that give you that sense of whole, because being able to be an advocate of humanity and being able to demonstrate kindness comes from a place of at least some element of wholeness. Julia, you used the word home, finding home inside yourself. And I think that's so beautiful, because when we have built our ecosystem, our community, we have to first feel like we have something to contribute to that community. And that's that home feeling. So let's explore this idea that kindness, leading with kindness and seeing kindness as a strength, gives us fortitude, resilience, power. And so the first question that we'll put out for reflection and conversation is, in your experience, what has been the role of kindness, empathy, and respect in shaping the world that you live in?
I actually have a story I would love to share. I think it's actually quite apropos. About a year and a half ago, I was sent this video that ended up going pretty viral. And it was Governor Pritzker of Illinois. He was doing a commencement speech at Northwestern. And one of the pieces of his speech, the theme was around kindness. And if you're looking for the smartest person in the room, it's generally speaking going to be the kindest person in the room. And his reasoning for that was actually more scientific almost than it was anything else. But he was saying that generally speaking, as humans, we have a normal sense of xenophobia. If we see something in someone that we don't fully understand, they're not like us. And so there are people who will just respond to that piece of them. But the people who are kind, who move forward and through that, are more developed. And they have recognized that this is something that you can have a feeling about without having to act on it, and that it's not something that our cognitive mind needs to focus on. It is something that we can then recognize and put behind us. But when you're dealing with people who are just bullies or intent on sounding the smartest or being the loudest, they're not moving through anything. They're just, they've come into any conversation with an agenda, and that's all they're going to focus on. And I think that looking at kindness as also an indicator of intelligence was really interesting. And it resonated so deeply with me, because there are people who are smart who are not kind. They are the opposite of kind. But the people who are smart and kind, they light up the room and they progress the world and they pay it forward in so many ways. And I think that if we could live recognizing kindness as this sign of intelligence and strength and calm and thoughtful responses, as opposed to, as you said earlier, Judy, this sense of weakness almost. And I've heard a couple of men that I've known in the past who are very big in business, and they'll talk about their sons as, I wish he wasn't so soft. He needs to be a jerk sometimes. And I like, why does he have to be a jerk? People can take him seriously if he's really kind and nice to people, as long as he's doing what he's supposed to do. And just because you're kind doesn't mean you're a pushover. And just because you're kind, it doesn't mean you won't become irritated with someone or tell them off, because sometimes that is being kind. I have a puppy right now. Me being kind to her is putting her in the crate sometimes so she can calm down and go to sleep. She needs it.
Thank you for that. What I loved about that is you're kind of hinting at kindness as a skill and something to be practiced. And it does take work a lot of the times to practice kindness, but the ones who do show up, they're showing up to do the work, right? They're showing up to put in the extra effort to be kind and not just neutral or negative. So for me, I think it's been modeled for me from many different people within my family, within my community, even strangers. And that gives me the permission to do it and reciprocate and pass it on. And I think that chain effect is also something that I hold on to, is we could be surrounded by hateful folks, but they can never fight up against kindness. Kindness will always win in my mind. And the more you do it, the easier it gets. And guess what? It's actually a positive feedback. You feel better. The folks on the other side feel better. And even beyond humanity, I think it goes to how we treat the earth, how we treat intangible things. If you ever talk to a plant, they grow faster. So however you can practice kindness in all forms is the only way we can move forward. And I truly believe, even though in this moment it is quite hard, in this post-election moment, the thing that gives me hope too is kindness will always win. Maybe not immediately, but in the long run. And that's the thing we have to push towards.
I heard once that there's a very important distinction between nice and kind. And nice is about managing impressions. It's about checking a box. Whereas kind is a more internal process. It's committing to seeing somebody's humanity and meeting them there and nurturing your relationship together. And I think a little more intention in the way that we speak about it, the way that we teach it, might be helpful, making it more of an essential human process. Like Kaisen, you were saying, it's a skill we can teach. It encompasses being open-minded and empathy, and it's not just, I know the right sentence to say to be considered nice. It is about the relationship, your relationship to another person and humanity in general.
Thank you for that, Julia. One of the ways that I think about kindness is the confidence of kindness. Not only can we cultivate the skill of kindness, is really recognizing that I don't diminish myself in any way because I am kind to someone, or if I am kind to the earth that we have the privilege to live on. it costs me something. It does cost me to be intentional. Sometimes it means humbling myself, but it never diminishes me. I can remember early on, and I've talked about this before, sitting in a library and reading about the life of George Washington Carver. And one of the things that he said was, you want to be able to treat the king and the pauper the same. And for me, I interpreted that as kindness, not fairness. Like, I want to be kind to people no matter who they are. And I've come to believe, and even said to my 13-year-old daughter yesterday when we were co-regulating, I said, the way somebody behaves, it says something about them. The way that we respond says everything about us. And so I just think that there is a confidence in being able to be kind, especially when someone around you isn't necessarily kind to you, that that's where you really see who you are. And are you confident enough to be yourself, or do you change to become like them? So I'm really thinking about the confidence of kindness.
It's so interesting to listen to everyone. I was trying to do my Lincoln weave, and I'm going to start with something you said, Kyson, about post-election, and that there'll be so much animosity, acrimony, accusations in our world in the next period of time. And it is our choice to act with kindness. And Nicole always says, as the vision of her leadership in this organization, is that there may be all kinds of things happening around us, but the action we take not only impresses us or feels good for us, it impacts the next person and then that person and that person. So it creates ripples. And right now, that's the most important thing we can do. So that was one piece. The second piece is that in all of our stories, there was an aspect of intentionality. You know, you talked, Kyson, about the skill. Vivian, you talked about the decision. You know, the slowing down, I think, is what contributes to the smart, that it's not reactive. It's more decision-oriented. It's more, this is how I want to do something. At least for me, that's where the smartness comes from. And Julie, you talked about the difference between nice and kind. I too had thought about polite or manners is not kindness. You know, it may be that someone who's kind says thank you, but this sort of formulaic aspect of being polite doesn't have anything to do with this heart of putting yourself in somebody else's shoes, of demonstrating your willingness to look and see the other person as who they are and what they need.
The nice comment that you made, Juliet, it also makes me think about the fact that if you look at gender specifically, young girls more so are instructed to be nice. So they are not encouraged to be kind. They are told they must be nice. Where I find the doubt that creeps in around kindness as a strength comes more from the male side of things, because I think that young men are often encouraged to be leaders, in quotes, or definitive, or quick decision makers, or, you know, the strongest ones. And when we start to pull all of that apart, it does characterize kindness into a bucket that it doesn't belong in, A, and B, this idea that girls are sugar and spice and everything nice, you know? I think we have to deconstruct that completely in order to really, really understand what's meant by leading with kindness. It's a very nuanced world we live in as it relates to these ways of being and these emotions.
At Leading for Children, we happen to have a very amazing opportunity because we have a leader who leads with kindness and who's modeling that way of leading for all of us. And it is an extraordinary strength. Nicole, I wondered, I was watching you nod as Vivian was talking, and I wonder if there was something you wanted to chime in.
Thank you, Judy. What you were saying, Vivian, resonated with me, and I'm just fascinated by this idea that not only do we genderify kindness, we also feel like it is isolated of leadership. And it fascinates me in a sad way almost, because I was taught by my grandmother that one of the strongest things that a leader has is kindness. She led the family, the community, from a place of kindness. And I can remember even once seeing her be disrespected. And I saw her stand up to this man with such grace and such warmth, yet it was so strong. And it baffled me how she could do it, because I went, oh, she is really setting him in his place. Yet she did it with such kindness. And when I see this phenomenon of young boys are taught to be strong and they're taught to be, you know, tough and rough, and girls are taught to be kind and demure and nice. And I'm like, well, everybody can be both. I can be tough and I can be kind. And actually, I think that is the truest testament of strength, when you can be resilient enough and disciplined enough to be kind, especially in unkind moments.
Thank you so much for that. Kyson, are you thinking you're ready?
Lots is bubbling up for me. I think a lot about the systems and structures of the world, and the ones that particularly reward unkind behavior, because we do know that happens, and we do see that play out in macro, micro ways all the time. But
the election.
The election. And with that, there has to be an unlearning or kind of a reframing for folks on what is the definition of success. And at the end of the day, if we're able to say kindness is the output or the feelings that everyone can share around kindness, I think that's a better approach for moving us forward and recreating a world that not only values that, but gets to practice it at the end of the day, like I mentioned before. So there has to be some way to remove the gender of kindness. There has to be ways in which we can practice it in a corporate workspace without feeling like it diminishes our ability to move up the ladder. There has to be so many different ways in which we break these things down across all our different environments to, like I said, redefine success for us.
If the Surgeon General says that we have an epidemic of loneliness, and we know that feeling like you belong mitigates that loneliness, the only way to get there is through kindness. And that's sort of ironic given the culture of individualism and taking care of yourself.
I don't know if this is apropos or not, but again, building on everything that Kyson and Nicole and Judy and Julie, you know, everybody's saying, I was suddenly reminded of how many times I have experienced in a business world sense, when people speak about, often men, unfortunately, it does seem to slant this way, but they'll talk about new business, for example, and you'll often hear things like, so-and-so is a beast at new business. He's killing it in new business. He's wrecking the competition. And even when you think about it that way, you're not speaking about somebody who is thinking strategically, who is weighing all of their options. It brings to mind this vision of a conquering hero, you know, somebody who went in and took over a land. I don't think I ever thought about it when I was in those moments, but I don't think I've ever heard of a woman referred to as a beast or killing the competition or any of that.
One of the things that I still think about, and Vivian, to your point, thinking about the language that we use, it's almost like this glorification of, I feel language shows us our value. It shows us the things that we value by the words that we use. And again, I go back to the example that my grandmother gave me. she used to say to me, when you're really pressed, what's in you is really going to come out. Like, you can pretend to be these certain ways. You can pretend to be kind, smart, committed, loyal. You can pretend all of these things. But when you really get pressed, what's in you is what's going to come out of you. And she said, it is a sign of insecurity when you are pressed and your first instinct is to destroy, conquer, bring into submission, or all the other things. Now, the way she would just say, if you're so scared, you try to keep everybody else down when you're pressed. And so I think that people think the opposite of kind is unkind. And I really think the opposite of kind is insecurity.
Whoa.
Very interesting.
When you said language matters, it made me think about how, Vivian, when you were talking about women are taught to be nice, we're not really taught to be nice. We're taught to not cause problems. And I think that when you're trying to not cause problems, that doesn't mean there isn't stuff going on underneath. You're not being authentic. And then whatever bond you do build with people is superficial and very breakable. And this has come up recently in my life where I feel like my identity is around being kind or being nice or being agreeable. And so when I have an issue with something or my feelings get hurt, I'm afraid to say something because I don't want to create a rift. But there already is a rift. It's just quiet. And it's going to be resentment if I don't say it. And I think expanding the definition of kindness a little bit, so it's not just avoiding conflict. I think conflict is human and it is necessary in the conversation. It strengthens relationships. And so being able to, out of kindness toward the relationship, say, this happened, it hurt my feelings, can we talk about it? That is kind. That is nurturing the relationship and making it less breakable.
I think kindness is when you actually choose to see the other person in their wholeness, that you're willing to take the time to say, this other person matters as much as I do. And the examples that often come into my mind of demonstrating kindness are not the kindness I show to Andy, my husband, or the kindness I show to Julia or to Nicole or Vivian or Kyson, but it's almost the kindness to strangers. It's almost that I see someone on the street and I choose to say hello and ask that person how they are. Or I choose to notice the person who's clearly sitting outside a food store and hasn't asked me necessarily for money, but it's very clear that perhaps I could say hello and ask how they are and start a conversation with that person because that person is a human. And I feel like I've learned to start conversations that lead to connections. And that's taking extra time, in a sense. The rewards to me are extraordinary. And so I think conflict avoidance for me is, am I willing to see the other person's perspective? Not am I willing to sort of just make it okay? So kindness, I think, it's complicated and it takes a lot of effort and intention, and the rewards are really great.
I think that there is something very interesting about choosing to respond with kindness in the face of somebody behaving in a way that you might perceive as angry or aggressive or mean or rude, because so often anger, aggression, rudeness, meanness is springing from something that we just have no idea about. Because why would we? We don't know this person. We don't live in their shoes. I believe it's often coming from a place where they feel they cannot control the situation that they are in that moment. And so their response is to lash out. And so very often people's response to the lashing out is to lash back. When you have an experience of someone pausing and responding with kindness, the results can be extraordinary. I remember my own experience of that, where I was in a very keyed up state and I was about to go in for surgery. I was dealing with a serious health problem and I just wanted to get my teeth cleaning appointment done before I, totally irrational. I had no need to get this done urgently. There was nothing wrong with me. But in my mind, somehow this became critical. And I called up the doctor's office and they were like, yeah, no, we can't get you in for 3 months. And I got irritable. And I actually said the words, I'm going for surgery. And I just wanted to control what I could control. And the woman on the other end of the phone, she said, and I will never forget this. She goes, let's try to give you some of that control back. And she found me an appointment. And she could have been justifiably like, well, too bad you didn't call sooner. So goodbye. We'll see you when we see you. And she chose to understand that all of my irritation and frustration was to actually panic and feeling like I couldn't control my life at that time. But to this day, when I think about her response to me, I still tear up because it was so kind.
Well, I think that your story and Nicole's concept about the opposite of kind is fear. And it, I think you said insecurity. And when you feel out of control, you're very insecure. And so those two pieces go really beautifully together.
I think that vulnerability is really disarming too. And if you go to somebody and you are honest about being panicked about your health situation, your whatever it is, they can see that and receive that a whole lot more easily and then meet you there than if you are going to them and reacting to whatever's going on in your body. And when people have ideas about other groups of people and then they're met with anger, it almost proves them right. Like, yes, these are people I should be afraid of, or these are people who need to be contained, or whatever it might be. But at the end of the day, we're all just trying to get back to that common humanity piece. And someone's got to do it first, or it's never going to happen.
You know, Julia, your description, in a sense, is that the person who chooses vulnerability and honesty is also being kind, because they're giving the other person the possibility to be kind back.
Mm-hmm. It's almost like giving that other person your trust for just a moment. And when someone trusts you, I think it's an honor and it's empowering, and you want to fulfill that for them. So it's a kind of kindness on both sides.
And I don't know, I think there's a confidence that with it. Sometimes my siblings will say, people will say, she never gets upset. She never raises her voice. She never gets mad. And they're looking at each other like, yes, she does. You may not see it, or sometimes it doesn't come across as this loud, boisterous anger. But I am so aware, when you talked about groups of people, I'm so aware of the myth of the angry Black woman, right? And oftentimes I tell people, and even if we are, we should be. We have every right to be angry. So first of all, if we are, then yes, we are. But most importantly, I'm like, I can say what I need to say and still carry my own dignity and my own grace and be true to who I am. And so I think sometimes when people have preconceived notions about others and then we react to that, it's almost like we're saying, you are absolutely correct in what you thought about us. And so I have seen firsthand situations where I had every right to be outraged and angry and be really boisterous with that, and me simply come back with, oh, that's interesting. What about me made you assume that I was paying with food stamps? And to see the look on that other person's face, like, oh, she didn't go off on me. She didn't, you know, or, let me guess. You have Black friends, don't you? I know you do. Have a good day. Because again, I can be kind. I don't have to play into the myth. I don't have to be gaslit and I'm not going to let myself be. But when you said that, I'm like, yes, that is so true. We should stand up for ourselves in times of injustice. I think it's very important that we don't lose ourselves in the core of who we are and our kindness and our humanity when we do stand up for ourselves. So I want to be clear, I do believe in, and I think now is the time we definitely should stand up. However, I think that we can always stand up with kindness. Otherwise, we become like the people we're standing up to.
I even noticed that people on the same quote unquote side turn on each other because you haven't said it exactly the right way or you missed this one piece. And I said to my friend yesterday, I think all of us are doing the very best that we can. We are taking in all the information that we are observing out in the world from all the various sources and reflecting it against our sense of what is morally good, our critical thinking skills. And we are trying to believe things that induce the least amount of suffering on the most amount of people. And we don't always agree about what the approach is, but we end up fighting over the wrong things and isolating from each other. And again, we're all in the boat of the least amount of human suffering. It's just fascinating to me how quickly people can get activated. And I think it's because they're hurt too. They're afraid and they're hurt. They're scared that they're going to be hurt and missed, misunderstood. And so they react.
Maybe our next conversation is about regulation and dysregulation and how hard it is to demonstrate kindness and humanity, access it when the going gets tough. And that so much of what got said here is that kindness is healing. In this conversation, I think we talked about kindness as a strength and where does kindness come from? And the antithesis of kindness is fear and out of controlness, and that kindness is different from being nice and having manners, and there's a lot of intention. Kaisen offered us the idea that kindness is a skill. Mm-hmm. I'd like to go back and say that children deserve to learn kindness, empathy, and respect from us. And they don't learn it as a lesson on Thursday at 4 o'clock. They learn it by watching all of us, the ecosystem of adults who care and educate them and who just surround them in the grocery store, in the public library, at the park. At Leading for Children, our approach to building strong communities for us and for our children starts with each one of us. As we practice kindness, we ripple it out to the next person and the next person, and it affects children. Thank you, Kaisen, Vivian, and Julia, for a very wonderful conversation. Nicole, it's such a joy always to share space with you. Thanks to our community for being loyal Humanity First champions. We appreciate that you joined us for this conversation about kindness, empathy, and respect. We'd like to invite you to be part of our community if you aren't already. And I'm going to pass it to you, Julia, to let people know all the different ways that they can be members of the Leading for Children Humanity First community.
Yes, I would love to invite everyone listening to subscribe to our newsletter, to follow us on our social medias. It's just Leading for Children on Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, YouTube. We have a podcast every month. We have national conversations every month. And thank you all for listening.